Harvey, I want to thank you for being willing to be interviewed by me. You and I know each other from Second Cup at the JCC, and I appreciate the fact that you are being interviewed by me. I'd like to start...
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Harvey. I'm on the board of directors of Harbord Village Residents Association, and one of our current projects is to study our neighborhood, meet people who have been here for many years, and ask them about the changes that they have experienced and observed. So let's start with when you moved into the neighborhood, and how old were you at the time?
I was born into the neighborhood. I was born on Borden Street. I think it was 81 or 82 Borden, I don't know, in 1938. And then shall I continue on that theme? Then we moved when I was about two to 113 Major Street, and we lived there for about 10 years. And then in about 1948, my family moved to Dalton Road.
And, okay, but you have been living in this neighborhood with your wife. Did you raise your daughter in this neighborhood?
When we were married, we lived outside the neighborhood for the first four years. And then we moved back to Dalton Road when my parents passed away. So we've been there for over 20 years as a family.
Right.
But I was there for many years before that, off and on.
So I think you're a wonderful person to be able to describe. Yeah.
But we were I was out of the neighborhood from time to time, working in other cities and so on. Okay. But not for long.
And when you first lived in the neighborhood, who was living under that roof with you?
Are we talking at birth?
Yeah.
I don't remember. But on Major Street, we were the tenants on the second floor of a three-room little flat, which had a kitchen, a bedroom, and a little living room. And we had various... I can give you names. Should I give you names? Okay. One of our my first group were the Kaplans. I remember them, an older couple. And then, interesting, we had the Bornsteins, who had a little daughter called Marilyn, who grew up to marry Mr. Lastman.
Oh.
Yeah, Marilyn Lastman.
She
was Marilyn Bornstein.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, we had the Coopersmiths, and then we moved. Is that answering your question?
It's answering my question. Do you have any siblings?
No.
So when you were living there with your parents, did your parents and you each have a bedroom, or did?
That's a good question. I was in a different room. I probably had the what became the den.
Uh-huh.
This is before the days of television,
uh-huh.
So there wasn't like that common room.
Right.
I had a little room, not the same room as my parents, that I recall. It got complicated after the war when my cousin and his mother came from Europe as refugees, right? So there were then five of us in those three rooms, and I have no idea how the sleeping arrangements were for about a year.
Yeah, but that was a lot of you sleeping.
Oh yeah,
in a place that really had only one bedroom.
Yes.
Yeah. And one bathroom.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd like to discuss just generally the changes in the neighborhood.
Okay, that's
so that's just a very vague, open question. Well, mm-hmm. I'll come back to specifics later.
Sure.
But if you can think of some of the local changes.
Most of them are fairly obvious. I don't recall supermarkets, okay, as a young kid. I don't recall Dominion or Metro, whatever it's called. I don't remember when that... It changed. We used to shop at Kensington, and I would go with my mother, and she had her little route that she took. And we also go to Harbord Bakery, the Harbord Fish Market, which was there. It was local shops. People now seem to do a lot of their stuff in the one big venue. Greenspan, common Greenspan butchers, if that means anything. Fells had a drugstore at Brunswick and Harvard. Probably others have mentioned it. That was one change that I remember. Second change, as a kid, going to, say, baseball games or hockey games, they were close. You just took the Sunnyside was very big. You take a streetcar at Bathurst and you're there, basically, right? A lot of movie theaters, because this is before television. On College Street, which was the center of our life, really, there are at least three movie theaters close by. Which, should I name them? I can do it even now. The Garden, which became Garden Billiards, which became, I think, Club 300. Does that mean anything to you? I don't know.
No.
300 College, obviously. The Bellevue, which is now Kaplansky's Deli.
Oh, my God.
Was one. And then something called the Playhouse, which used to give free dishes away which meant that my mother dragged me there to get her whole set. At that time. On Bloor Street, also three or four movie theaters, all within Bathurst and Brunswick.
Wow.
So, you know, that was a big thing. And that was a source. On Saturday, kids would go to one of these theaters, and you'd get a free comic book, and you'd see all kinds of cartoons. I'm sure you grew up in Montreal.
Yeah,
they had similar stuff?
No. Montreal, there was supposedly this big, terrible fire. And children under 16 could not get into movie theaters at all.
Without the accompaniment of adults?
No,
not
they
at
were
all.
Not allowed in at all.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we used to go without our adult supervision. It was very noisy, as you can imagine. But you'd see like little shorts, like the Three Stooges. But it was different. It was fun. There's a lot of it was fun. And then we listened to the radio a lot, as you can imagine. Everybody had their favorite radio shows.
Yeah. But there were so many theaters that you could go to with parents or preferably without parents.
Yeah, I'm going way back to what I remember.
And the Bloor Cinema?
Yeah.
Was that one of the theaters?
The Bloor Cinema, when you call the Bloor Cinema, the Bloor Cinema at that time is now Blee's Palace. It was called the Bloor.
Uh-huh.
What's called the Bloor Cinema now, which is, by the way, in permanent repairs, it looks like, used to be the Midtown. Okay, and we knew the type of the Bloor Cinema was actually an MGM. It gets complicated. Lowe's Theater, which was on Young and Queen, was the MGM first run. The Bloor was MGM second run.
Okay. But a lot of movie theaters in the neighborhood.
I'm doing this from my young lad's point of view, right? Because that's when you start noticing changes. Bowling was very popular. I'm now getting a little older, and people used to go bowling. There was the Spadina Bowl, which was a college in Spadina, which I think is a pool hall now, if I'm not mistaken. And there was the Midtown Bowl, which I think became, I don't know what it is now, I guess it's Sobeys now. Right? Okay, but it went through various stages. And everybody used to, we even formed when I was about 13, we formed a local bowling league of the neighborhood kids. That was, you know, kids were pretty independent.
Yeah.
Another change, we all belonged to teenage clubs. And we all had club jackets. It wasn't that we were tough kids, we just had, we belonged to clubs. Some were supervised at the Y. With adult leadership, right? We didn't. We had our own leadership. Like we formed a club, which I thought was a great idea.
Well, that's something that was similar to Montreal, that we had these clubs, and with names.
Yeah, and you'll learn a lot about yourself and other people by being in these clubs. In fact, I probably peaked as a teenager when I was became the representative on the Canadian Jewish Congress for my club, which sort of made me a little minor celebrity in my little group. But it was a real pain to go there. But that's another story.
But these were important little communities
very
for you.
Much, yeah, we had 30 members of our club.
And when you said at the Y, what do you mean when you said the Y?
I meant here, right here in this building that we're in now. It was called the YMHA, YM okay. and YWHA.
Right. But this used to be at Brunswick and College.
Yeah, but only when I was a very young kid. When I was about 15, I think, they came here.
Okay.
I used to go occasionally to Brunswick and College to swim.
Right, okay.
Okay. But that was right next to the Cheder. I went to a Jewish school, which was right next door. And there's also a pool hall next door that I didn't go to, but others did. It was a different world.
Yeah, well, and that's what I wanted.
The other change?
Yes,
other
please. Yes, please.
It seems that we could, I've talked to others about this, we could go to school on our own when we were 5 years old, right? You would be taken once, maybe even, not even by your parent, but by an older kid, and then you're on your own. Because a lot of kids are going there. I mean, you tended to walk to school. I used to walk through back lanes to school. It's not nothing of it. With my own child, many years later, wouldn't ever do that.
Yeah.
I don't know what you were like with your kids.
No.
At a different age. Your kids are older than mine.
Yeah. But, so I think my children were in that kind of transition period. They did walk on their own. But I agree with you now that they don't.
Yeah.
And that we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Without really working, right? Without
Absolutely.
Word.
Yeah. I want to talk about immigration and the different waves of immigration.
Sure.
So what can you talk about in this neighborhood?
Personal observation, right after the war, a lot of Jewish people known as Greenhorns came over. I don't know if you had the same, right?
Yeah.
Including my cousin. We were thrilled that they were alive, by the way. It wasn't just they'd been having rough times. We were just glad they were alive. So they came over. That was fairly frequent. I remember it popping up in my class in public school around that time after the war would be kids who couldn't speak English would pop up in your class and then quickly move through the grades as soon as they were picking up English until they were, some of them were brilliant, right? But you didn't know it because they couldn't speak. There was no resentment that I recall of anybody towards these kids. However, when I joined my club, there were some kids from a snobbier area who were in the club who resented some of the immigrant kids who were now in the club. And actually at one point, tried to get a couple of them expelled from the club, which is when I quit, by the way. They seemed to think, they didn't like the, and I'm talking of 1956, they didn't seem to like that other kids were saying, oh, you've got a bunch of, you know, greenhorns. And it was a certain weird, sick prejudice by snobs. What else about immigration? I remember a friend of mine was Japanese, and he wasn't especially an immigrant. He was one of those kids who had been interned in the West Coast. Did you know about that?
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
sure you did.
Yeah.
And I remember befriending him without really knowing much about his background at that point. So I recall that. I don't recall too many Chinese kids at all. And my school was Spadina and college. I went to Lansdowne.
Oh, you did?
Right,
oh,
right. So, you know, it was different. Very few, if any, West Indies kids. There were a couple, but, you saw them, but I didn't know who they were.
Now, you said in this group, your group of about 30, some of the kids were somewhat snobbish. What about in the school? How did all the different groups get along?
What level of school are we talking about?
I'm talking about grade 2, grade 5. Let's start with elementary school, because you were at Lansdowne.
Elementary school, I was not, because most of our parents were immigrants. Mm-hmm. So how could you possibly have any feeling about, it was not any issue at all.
And what about children, say, Asian children?
There weren't very few,
so
hardly any that I remember. I should have brought a class photograph. Maybe I will later on, okay?
Yeah.
I will, if you're going to be around in the next couple of days.
I will.
I'll bring you my early... You won't see Asian kids in the photograph.
So it was a homogeneous group of kids.
A lot of Jews in this area, plus others of various nationality.
And when you think of, I'm not talking about school per se, but just the waves of immigration, what have you seen over your whatever number, 72?
In this area?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good question. Waves. It depends. What do you consider Spadina and College the annex?
Yeah, we're talking about Spadina to Bathurst, College to Bloor.
Okay. Well, I've seen a lot more Oriental kids. An awful lot. A lot of Portuguese kids. Again, my daughter went to a school, two schools actually, near King Edward, where there were a lot of Portuguese. And I remember going there on a parents' night, and they had a little assembly for the parents, and they had translators in four different Oriental languages, right? Which I thought was wild. So a lot of Orientals, Portuguese, Italians at first. Right, that was sort of the first wave. And I really didn't see any conflict. Mm-hmm. There may have been, right?
But from wasn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But from my point of view, growing up, I didn't really notice anything bad. But you kind of learn instinctively as you go through where certain people hang out by ethnicity. Okay, like Bloor Street for a while seemed to be a Hungarian area, the restaurants.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
A sociologist once took me on a tour, and he showed me how to figure out who lives where based on stores and types of and whatever. So now, obviously, you can't walk three feet without a sushi restaurant.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And like in Montreal, same where we were downtown Montreal. A lot of I'm not even sure that they're. I'm not sure if they're Korean. I don't know who runs them. But okay. Is that
okay.
Answering?
Yeah. Very, very much so. We're talking about the waves of immigration.
Yeah.
Can you talk about religion and religious institutions?
That's easy. Okay, from my point of view, again.
Of course.
Okay, and growing up until I was maybe 18, on a Jewish holiday, we would go to a synagogue downtown, and then during various breaks, a group of my friends and I would wander and visit other synagogues within walking distance, and there was probably three or four very close by, Spadina or just off. Well, the one that you know on Cecil Street, there was a synagogue.
Yeah.
And as recently as 10 years ago, I think I went to some bar mitzvah party there. I don't know if there's still a synagogue. So there is that. A lot of the synagogues then became churches of various faiths, right? We noticed that. In this area, on Brunswick, there were two synagogues. One was at Sussex and Brunswick, and then another one is where it is right now, the Nuriver.
The Nuriver.
Yeah. And I had my bar mitzvah in one of them. I don't remember which one at this point. But my grandfather used to go to the one at the corner. And then, well, I don't want to get into the nasty politics, but I noticed that, I'll put it bluntly, I got the impression that in the Nuriver there was a big movement by young families to kind of take over and run the agenda to benefit their own kids, which included probably education and, you know, just they're trying to get their kids to adhere, whereas the old folks were being kind of left out of their plans a little bit.
When you're saying this, are you talking about when you were 12, when you were 20, or when you were 50?
When I was, after I was 18, because my grandfather died when I was 17, and everything seemed okay then, because he was kind of content. But after that, I noticed there was a movement against, not against it, but my mother, for example, used to still try to go to the Nuriver. Now, my father used to sing in a choir. On holiday, he was like my uncle was a cantor, so they would do gigs all over the area. They'd go to Rochester, New York, and do gigs in St. Catharines. So I didn't exactly. They didn't have a synagogue that I belonged to. I would go to the closest one, or if they were in Toronto, I would go to where my dad was, right, which is normal, right? Okay. So, but my observation from talking to people was that this was going on here.
So this would have been...
I don't know if it's true.
Right, right. So this would have been just before 1960.
This would have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can even, there's a man I always associate, and I've gone to the synagogue since, and it's seemed very welcoming, but I was there one day in the holidays, about 2 years ago, and it was almost empty. It seems that the people didn't go every single moment of all the services. It was very strange. It was very strange. There's a, his wife used to be a teacher, I think a vice principal or principal here, Schoenfeld. And he seemed to be, in my mind, one of the leaders of this movement.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. You know, he belongs to the Nerriver. Yeah.
But at one point he was the Nerriver, I thought.
Uh-huh. Could be, I don't know.
Do you know him at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I used to
he seems like a nice man,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, it's just, you're asking me changes.
Yeah, and that's, okay. And that's what we're looking
at. And it's only observation, and I could be wrong.
What about class structure? I mean, you talked about when you were with that group, and there were some of the kids who were snobbish about the, as you call them, greenhorns.
Yeah.
But generally
they were socially upwardly mobile.
And but generally, in this neighborhood, what you saw 50, 60, 70 years ago, what you see now, changes?
Yeah, that's easy. Again, there's two groups. There's a group of people, including my lawyer, is one of them. Can I mention the name?
Why not?
Sheldon Silverman. You don't know him. He lives on Major Street. Grew up on Major Street. Mm-hmm. Lived in the north, as we call it, like north of Eglinton, for many years, bringing up his kids there. And when his kids were grown, he moved back to Major Street. He now lives just below Harvard Street in the same home that Tony Ayano used to live in?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
If you want to locate it. And so there's a lot of people like that who, well, I know all kinds of them, right? They grew up around here in public school. They probably went to Huron or Lansdowne or King Edward. Then they moved up north. And some either went further up north, like Thornhill, Richmond Hill, and then others settled here because it was good memories and simple. Okay, and I'm not sure if that's snobbishness, and I'm not sure which group is the snobbish group. I think the one group has in their mind, I think a lot of parents have in their mind a Jewish education, Jewish friends, whatever. I personally found this a great area to grow up in and a great area to raise my kid. Now, did you raise your kids here or elsewhere?
No, I didn't raise my children here. My children went to Bialik School,
okay,
and that's Bathurst, Eglinton.
Yeah.
So I lived near there so they could go there.
Okay.
And then as soon as they moved out, I came down here.
Because?
Because I love it down here.
You see?
Yeah.
But that's not snobbishness. You're thinking of your kids, right?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted a Hebrew education.
Yeah.
It didn't exist down here at that time.
Well, there was no, like, Talmud Torah they could have gone to?
I don't think it was easy, right?
My generation, we just went to... It was college in Brunswick.
Yeah, it wasn't there when my children went to school.
Oh, okay. Yeah. By the way, my classes, once you hit about age 10, I went to my bar mitzvah and then beyond a little bit. When you were a little older, your class ended about 8:30 at night. So you'd have to go on your own from 6:30 to 8:30 walking along Brunswick in the dark streets.
Well, that's something I was going to come to later. So since you brought it up, I'm going to put it in right now, and that is safety and security in the neighborhood, how it used to be and how you see it now.
That's funny. Be very frank.
Yeah.
When I was in grade 8, a girl in my class was raped, a gang rape in Christie Pits. One of the culprits was in my class as well, and he was hauled off, and I never saw him again. Giving an example, none of these people involved were Jewish, by the way, in that incident. That's one. Were we worried about... there were certain... a little anecdote. When I'm about 10 years old, coming home from Jewish school to Dalton Road, 11 years old, I guess, a kid came out of the dark with a knife, and he asked for my money. And I didn't have any money, of course. And then another kid came out, a bigger kid, and it was somebody I knew, and he said, "Oh, Harvey." He said, "It's Harvey. It's okay." He said, "He's a good guy." And that, so we had our own little rules. In other words, I always felt that my neighborhood would take care of us. I was never, I can't recall ever being in a fight with a bully. I may have been bullied, but I was too stupid to realize I was being bullied, so I didn't react. So we were safe that way. Friends of mine who went to Huron, mm-hmm. which was, you know, my best friend went to Huron, lived at Brunswick, parallel to me. He was always running home from school, being chased by a particular couple of bullies. I mean, all stories vary, right? So I can't say it was safe for me, I felt. But we didn't have our parents in our mind to protect us.
Now, you talked about this terrible thing that happened to this girl in Christie Pits. But generally speaking, in the neighborhood, did it feel like a safe, secure place?
Yeah.
Or was...
Well, you kind of knew, you knew where... The Brunswick House was always there. So there'd be drunks coming out, but you wouldn't be around the Brunswick House when they were coming out.
Did you lock your doors at night or during the
day? That's a good question. During the day, for sure. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about, because we also, on Dalton, we had a rooming house. Mm-hmm. We ran a rooming house, so we would lock it for the safety of our tenants. They didn't have keys to their rooms, though, if you want to get into that. That surprised you a bit? We had about three tenants. There were students, or one professor, a couple of students, and they didn't have keys to their room. They did have a key to the house. And my mother was a good landlady. There were rules about, you know, visitors, believe it or not, and common sense, don't come home late.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was going to look at was kind of cottage industry, I mean, people working at home. So in that respect, your mother had that because she ran a little rooming house with three tenants.
And she also made wedding dresses. She was a seamstress. So she would make wedding dresses. I recall her doing that for a while. And after a while, she didn't. And then we had a little store on Vaughan Road that she would drag her. My father had to quit his job. My father was a tailor and a fur finisher, so he would quit his job. But he hated that. He loved hanging out in the shop, talking to the boys as they worked, right? And so the idea of being in a store with my mother bothered him.
So that was really her shop where she made wedding dresses?
No, she made wedding dresses at home. We had a cleaning store, basically, where they did alterations, you know.
Uh-huh. Whatever. And your mother was one of the people who did the alterations.
Yeah.
But it sounds like she was a businesswoman, your mother.
My mother had, in Poland, when she was a late teenager, had her own business and had about three girls working for her. Again, to do with the textile stuff.
So your mother had a cleaning business on Vaughan?
Briefly, for a few years, about 3 years.
But in terms of working at home, she had three tenants, and she made these wedding dresses for a while.
That's right. But my father was a tailor, a fur finisher, which was seasonal work.
Right.
So he would be laid off for about 4 months every year. Otherwise, he was a freelance. He worked in several shops that, you know, he had good connections with. But then during his laid off time, he would bring in, still working freelance, it would be at home. We have two sewing machines still. One is an old Singer foot pedal, and the other is an electric one. And if somebody wants to buy one of them, they're welcome to.
Can you sew? Did you ever learn to sew? Are you a tailor at all?
No. My job, when their eyesight was failing, was to thread the needle.
Wow.
Did you ever do that?
Yeah, it's not easy.
Now
you can't do it. Now somebody would have to do it for you.
That's right. But I can't sew, no.
Did you see the streets changing and the streets that you walked on, the streets that you lived
Dalton
on.
Dalton Road. There was a house. There's no if you take a walk, there's no number 12 or 14 because there's a park there now. They took the houses away during the time that we were there, for example. Walking down Major, toward which you've done probably.
Many times.
Right. There used to be a St. John's convent hospital kind of thingy. It's now whatever, the old folks home there. Part of the doctor's hospital connected.
Oh, Kensington Gardens.
Place.
Yeah, yeah.
But that used to be a sort of a nunnery, we thought. It was probably, I don't know what it was, but it was a convent. We saw nuns coming
right,
out.
Right, right. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
So, and
that's changed.
Right. Any other changes that you can think of?
A lot of houses are very similar to what they were then. Like if I walked down Major Street in particular, I wouldn't know what year it was, except for, you know, from the houses. The subtle changes, but example, there are no apartment buildings on Major. There's no apartment buildings. There's an old apartment building that's just a big house on Dalton, right by Lowther. But would you know it?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another change, Loretta College was a school on Brunswick.
Right, that's North
Barton.
Bloor.
Yeah,
right, and that's become a very...
That's an apartment building.
Right, right.
I'm trying to think more your neck of the woods. Well, for example, you had Central Tech kind of occupied a big chunk of Borden, didn't it?
Right.
So that didn't change.
Right.
Has anything changed on Borden? I don't think so.
Nothing significant.
No.
At
the corner of Sussex and Brunswick, I know it's changed. Because it used to be a synagogue, and now it's some sort of art thing.
Oh, that's right, the pottery shop.
Yeah.
See,
that's changed.
No, that's Harbord and
whatever.
Oh, yeah, there is a building there. It is some kind of office building.
Yeah. It was a government. Whatever.
What about, I'm talking about a kind of way of life, traffic, sidewalks?
No. I'm not sure what you mean by sidewalk. Like, what are you asking me about sidewalks? Yes, there were.
And people using them in different ways, using them.
One thing, that's good. On Major Street, there were a lot of kids when I was growing up. Remember, this is me at different ages. So the Major Street kid, we'd have our little wagons and bike, I had a tricycle, and we'd be on the sidewalk, zoom, 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 right? Watching out for other people, of course. Not as a young kid playing on the street, on the road. We just didn't. It was like a lot of, and there were a lot of, again, you've heard this before, the ice truck.
Okay.
For example, there's also other, like, horse-driven carriages. A lot of things that now would be motorized were horse-driven. So there's a lot of horse droppings.
Now, was this individual families, or was this delivery of different goods?
This would be
goods?
Companies. Companies would deliver.
So what was
goods.
Delivered
oh,
by?
The milkman.
Okay.
And as kids, you used to watch with amazement as the horse seemed to know where to stop, and the milkman would come running out with the milk.
Yeah.
And you would leave a little note as to how much milk you wanted. And you know, for the ice, this will be interesting for you. We lived on the second floor in Major Street, so we had to put in the window a card. And the card had either 50 or 25, the number of pounds we wanted him to drag upstairs. And he would look and he would go to his truck and take it.
For your ice box.
Yeah. That way he didn't have, he would know.
And what else was delivered by horse? So it was, you're talking about...
Did I remember?
Yeah, right.
Eaton's, I think at one point, at one point had horse wagons. And I seem to remember that.
Yeah.
Again, it could be my mind playing. But I know for sure the Iceman, and I know others, not the Postman, that I can recall.
Right.
And there were stables in the lanes behind. You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
Where? So
on Major Street, there'd be stables here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I have a photograph of me as a child posing on a horse, a pony. There's a guy who went around the neighborhood with a pony and a camera, and he would get the kids to plop up on it, and he would take a picture.
Yeah, yeah, probably a nickel or something.
And like develop it right there.
Yeah.
That was
so he had one of those. Cameras.
That was three or four. So I can actually say that probably the only time I ever rode a horse was that time. So.
And how did people get around in your recollection?
It depends. If you want to go downtown, if you lived at Harvard and anywhere, if you wanted to go shopping downtown, there is a Harvard streetcar that you may not know this, that went along Harvard to Spadina, along Spadina to Dundas, and then along Dundas going east. So you'd get off at Dundas and Yonge on the Harvard streetcar without changing. At one point, I worked at, in high school, I worked at Simpson Sears. Do you know where that was at all? No. It was at Jarvis and Dundas. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it was where the where Sears would deliver stuff. This is going way back. And I would get to work by taking that streetcar without having to change.
So
there was no subway until about 1954.
But that means there were tracks on Harvard which have been removed.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And if you went to Harvard Collegiate, there were some kids who lived just a little bit out of the way who would take the streetcar to get to Harvard Collegiate. I walked to Harvard Collegiate, which took 15 minutes.
Yeah,
whatever.
But there
weren't that many cars. There weren't that many cars. People... When one of my uncles would buy a car, that was a big event. My parents did have a car later on, but they would use it for outings to Lake Simcoe. They would go for a slow ride. Both of them could drive, by the way.
Wow.
Oddly enough.
So your mother was
my mother was quite a going concern, as you can tell from this.
Yeah.
After she passed away, I was in the bank one day, and Wiener Hardware.
Yeah.
So Wiener, did you know the Wiener brothers?
No.
So he turned to me, saw me, and said, "Your mother was a real tough lady." He said that, as opposed to, "I'm sorry that your mother passed." Okay. All right. So she had a certain reputation.
Yeah. Harvey, you mentioned that. Some of the lanes had stables for the horses. What else do you remember about the back lanes?
A lot of horse droppings as well.
Yeah.
They were well traveled. We thought they were safe because they led right to the school. It almost seemed like this was a given way. You cut across through the lanes, and you had a choice of lanes. So which way shall I go today? Okay, I only live 5 minutes away. That's basically all. Oh, I remember some sort of weeds that would stick to you, and I don't know what they're called.
They were growing in the lanes?
Yeah.
They would come through the concrete?
Yeah.
Tough weeds.
Yeah, tough weeds.
So in terms
remember, we're talking about me way back. I'm not talking too much. I'm trying to show you what it was like then, and trying to show the change. I haven't walked through the lanes much lately, like maybe hardly at all.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you can still do it.
Oh yeah, I like the lanes. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
They're
and you can cross into other streets. I know you can at Brunswick and Bloor.
Yeah.
But can you do it just from Roberts to Major? There used
definitely.
To be a connection.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to know.
Yeah. Okay. So did you and your friends ever use the lanes other than to walk to school?
No, not really.
Yeah,
we didn't play in the lanes.
Yeah. What about backyards?
Yeah.
Did you have them? And how do you remember people using them at that time? And any comments on today?
Okay, hardly ever do I remember backyards in Toronto. Only when people were moving north of Eglinton, we might visit somebody and he would... to take us to the backyard and you'd have a table set up and we might have coffee or something. But backyards was not a big thing. Today, depends who it is, right? We have a not much of a backyard for whatever reason. Hard to explain. My neighbors don't really have backyards as such.
Some people like the backyards a lot.
Some people would make that the feature of their existence.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That was not a big thing for us.
And what about were there?
We had a garden at one point, if that means anything.
And what was growing in the garden?
For a while, we had tomatoes and different things like that. Some beans. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the features of our house, we have a lilac bush, and neighbors even to this day will come and help themselves at our invitation to the lilacs.
And if they don't, if it's not at your invitation, they might still help themselves.
Of course. But if you know, if they, we know which neighbors like the lilacs.
Yeah. Somebody described to me in an interview. Go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
And I was just saying, somebody described to me that they used to go and take people's lilacs and then sell them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that I remember was very important to a kid. Yeah. It was the chestnut tree.
Okay,
because
so
we had games involving chestnuts that you probably, by your face, you don't know what I'm talking about. We'd gather chestnuts. I'm sure some people would roast them as well. And we knew where the chestnut trees were on Major Street, right? That became a big thing. So at a certain point on a weekend, the first weekend that they were really out, you'd have a few kids there throwing sticks at the chestnut thing. But one thing kids did, again, you peel the chestnut and you attach a string to it, through it. Kids did this.
Yeah.
And then you would have fights with the chestnut. So I would hold my chestnut and somebody would try to smash it with his chestnut, trying not to break your knuckles. And let's suppose they did. They'd ask me, well, how old was your chestnut? And that meant, how many chestnuts had your chestnut beaten? So let's suppose my chestnut was 4 years old, right? Had four victories before he smashed it. He would get those four chestnuts to his. There was a certain prestige involving chestnuts. Sounds silly, but
no, it sounds wonderful.
Kids played all kinds of wonderful games.
Very creative.
Yeah.
You weren't spending $80 on toys. You just got some chestnuts.
We also would do things with marbles at school. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you encountered.
We played with marbles in the winter.
Yeah, we played with marbles. We had it was almost like a casino. Yeah. There'd be a wall of kids setting up marbles, and if you hit it, you would win marbles or money, even like nickels, whatever. Kids were very inventive.
Yeah.
There was a guy called Sam Goodmacher, who was known as Fat Sam, and he traded comics. And I remember one day a knock on my door when I was a major, and he went upstairs with me, and we traded comics. And that was a big thing. It's cheaper to trade than to always have to buy, right?
So there was no exchange of money. You just got each other's.
That's
comics.
Right. And classic comics.
Oh yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
It was two for one. If you wanted a classic comic, you had to trade two ordinary ones. It was very simple. But they were valuable because the book reports. Wow.
That's right. And it was an easier way to read those classic books.
Wasn't it? Though?
Yeah. What about heating? How were the homes heated?
That's a good question also. Oil, for the most part, that I remembered. Coal at one point. Oil later on. I don't remember anything else.
But the coal, they would shovel it in.
Yeah.
Good old dirty coal.
Yeah. But remember, when we rented, I didn't care. Mm-hmm. I was just a kid. When we had our own house, there was oil, and they would, you know, I forget what the company was at this point.
Any memories about the collection of garbage?
No.
Or storage of garbage?
No.
Okay.
Seriously.
Yeah. Any thoughts about...
Probably more frequent than now would be my guess.
Yeah. Any recollection about, in your adolescence, dating then versus dating now?
Oh. You're getting personal now. Give me an age period when you say adolescence.
Say 17 to 23.
Oh, God. That's adolescence for you?
I don't know. 23, I was married.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Okay. Well, speaking for myself, okay, for the most part, we're talking, let's say, 15 to 20, okay? For the most part, you would ask out a girl, there's a lot of the girl asking you out. Actually, there was a lot of that, believe it or not. I was often considered a safe date to different bar mitzvahs and weddings. So I was an acceptable nice boy, nice Jewish boy, who would be, who would, somebody would phone me up and they'd say, so-and-so knows you, would you like to go? But I didn't think of it as a romantic evening. When I think back to it, I thought of it as that was the part of the thing of going out with almost a complete stranger who I had no feelings for, right, at all. They were nice, very nice girls. Probably, if I had given it much thought, I would regret some opportunities that I...
Lost opportunities.
Many, many lost opportunities. One thing about me, and it shows how stupid I was or whatever... I'd meet a girl, and I would ask her out at a dance, at a party, we'd go to a show, right? And I would take her home and say goodnight, and I had, oh, that was nice, we had a nice time, we talked, we went to the show. I'd ask her out again, same thing, and I'd ask her out a third time, and she'd say no. Because when I look back, I wasn't going anywhere with the relationship. Right, there was no real deep romantic thing at all. It wasn't even shyness. It was just I wasn't really, in my mind, these girls were girls to be companions and to go out with. I wasn't thinking seriously. I wasn't thinking of sex
or even kissing.
I thought of kissing, and occasionally I did, but it wasn't, there was no consequences to it, or nothing bad about it. And your point of view would be different, because it's there's so many elements of this that I could get into, but be specific. I'll be candid.
Well, just dating in general, whether... People went out as groups or you
did? I was in a club, so we had club parties.
Yeah.
We had rules about no alcohol in our club party because, most of the girls would still be underage, and we were all underage. Mm-hmm. And I remember one guy did bring in a bottle of liquor and tried to spike some drinks. We had a party in the Barclay Hotel once where we rented a suite. But, it wasn't like mass sex going on. There was nothing going on. But it sounded good, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Right. So, it was very different. I'll be very frank. In my high school, I only knew of one couple that actually had sex, and that we all knew about it. What do you think of that? If others did, nobody talked about it. There was a group of guys that I knew. Who would go to a prostitute. How's that? And there was a well-known older woman, who was a prostitute, who was in her late 40s. And so these guys would have their sexual initiation by going to this prostitute. And that was somehow considered okay.
Do you know how much they paid?
No. I would guess... because there used to be a joke, 10 and 3. Have you ever heard that term before?
Never.
Okay. 10 and 3 refer to $10 for the girl and $3 for the room.
Wow, so that was a lot of money.
I don't know. I only heard these things. And it's sad when you think back to that. Like, it was just one of these... taboo things where the word would get around very quickly. Oh, there was a grapevine like you wouldn't believe. Now, I don't know if you had that in your
I'm sure.
background.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This stuff, especially something like that, which was much more taboo Right now, I think it's a different pressure. I think now it's more of a pressure to do it. And at that time, it was to not do it. And if you did, it was a secret.
Yeah. I do know of one girl who had an abortion. She was a friend of mine. And she had to go to Buffalo to have the abortion.
And she would have been about what age?
She would have been, I don't know, 16 maybe.
Yeah. Oh, so that would have been very tough at that time.
Yeah, and her parents never knew about it.
Oh, my God. So her friends arranged it, or her friend's parents?
Somebody arranged it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. And like we don't. I still see her okay, and we don't talk about
it. But it's funny, all these decades later,
Well, how could you not?
Yeah.
This was very unusual,
etc. Yeah. Must have been very
oddly dramatic. Enough, she married the guy eventually. Like many years later, she married the guy.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're asking me about morals, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Just practice, not morals. Morals. That's it. Of course that would those would have changed also.
Okay, I'll tell you a story.
Please.
I used to work in Ottawa, and I would get a lift back with a British guy who had been a race car driver in Britain, and he was a fellow teacher right in Ottawa, and he was he had a girlfriend in Toronto who was much younger than him, and more my age at the time. And I knew, I'd heard her, she was a Jewish girl, he was not. And he had a very heavy sexual relationship with her, right? But in the Jewish community, she was not in any way considered somebody who would have a sexual relationship with anybody. So in other words, there was that double standard that Jewish girls basically kept themselves pure for possible marriage. Now, another group of my friends, I'm giving you all kinds of secrets here, another group of my friends used to go to Crystal Beach, and they would meet Jewish girls from Buffalo area who they knew they would never see in their ordinary thing, and they would get it on there. And this was well known to people.
So
I found that whole thing creepy, by the way.
Yeah, but the local Jewish girls were meant to be pure.
Yeah, and occasionally one of our friends would fall in love with one of them, who the odd one wasn't pure. Usually they were from out of town, they're from small towns. And I know a guy that I knew married one of them and was sort of laughed at. Of course, she was extremely wealthy. And so that was probably his motive for marrying her. I'm sure he knew what she was all about. We're talking, you know, certain morality. You don't want to share anything. You will after this recording,
sure.
Perhaps.
Now we're getting...
I know. But I'm giving you a thing of what was going on then, mm-hmm. I thought. I was not part of any much of that, put it that way.
And if you would compare then with now... What do you think are the major differences?
I think now, my own observation, and I'm guessing, because what do I know? An awful lot of the girls that my daughter went to school with, by the time they were 20, had a steady boyfriend, were possibly living with them for a while. I find that the morality is much looser. There's also more divorces now, I think. I think people, I'm not sure why they get married so early, but they do. You got married young.
Yeah.
Okay, but, you know, I don't know if in your world you've seen more promiscuous. It isn't really promiscuity if everybody is carrying on the same way and they're not like... doing it indiscriminately. They're having sex much more frequently. How's that?
More frequently and earlier, I think.
I don't know how earlier. That's what I don't know. I don't know. Do you know?
Well, I think compared to what we did in high school, and you and I are very close in age, I think there was less at that time, except, as you said, if they would go away to get it somewhere else. Yeah. Okay. I want to come back briefly. Oh, yeah. Anything about animals? Home pets, animals?
That's a good point. My parents didn't like pets, so when we had the house, we didn't have pets. Also, we had tenants who wouldn't like pets. When we lived on Major Street as tenants, the people had a dog and a cat. I still remember the names of each of them because I liked them. The dog was Brownie and the cat was Snookums. Okay. We didn't. In grade 8, a Japanese kid that I knew called Kenny Miyasaki sold me a goldfish as a pet. And I took this goldfish home, which of course died within 3 days. I was actually heartbroken.
Aww.
And so I never had another pet. We did have on Dalton for about 18 years, two cats who recently passed away, which broke my wife's heart. Me, not so much.
Yeah, yeah.
She was really attached to them. And they were very expensive to take care of, and they died. I had nothing to do with it. They were put away, actually.
Yeah.
You have pets?
No. I have had, but yeah. I don't now.
There's a certain heartbreak when the time is over.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. Is there anything else you might like to say, because you've touched on it already, about the stores all the way from College, Harvard, Bloor?
And local stores. We lived on Major and Ulster. So there were two stores, one next to us almost, two doors away, and another across the road. And they would be local convenience stores, and the type of thing you'd buy there would be bubble gum, you know. I don't think they sold newspapers there. It was just very, I don't even know how they stayed in business, to tell you the truth.
Did you get to know the owners quite well?
No.
It wasn't a kind of personal thing, but they were very small stores.
Right. On Bloor Street, I got to know the owners a bit. When I say got to know, not even to say hello to most of them, but I might know their kid, that type of thing. One thing, this you'll find interesting. There used to be, if there was a sporting event, like a fight, very few people had television sets, but we would go to either one of the local restaurants that had a television. I could name them, but it wouldn't mean anything to you. There was a place called the Midtown Restaurant and the Java Shop.
On what street?
On Bloor, just east of Bathurst. Mm-hmm. There's probably restaurants there now, but I don't know what they're called. These were, when the kids we had dances here 4 nights a week.
Yes.
At the Y.
Uh-huh.
Wednesday and Thursday and Saturday and Sunday night.
Whoa.
There were dances.
Ballroom dancing?
No, record hops, basically.
Yeah.
And different age groups slightly. 16 were a little younger. Wednesday was a little younger, and Saturday was a little younger. And it was a great way to hang out.
Yeah. And it was somewhat supervised and
controlled.
Yes.
And, you might, your day, your typical day, I did very poorly in high school because of all these were major distractions. But it wasn't just to meet girls, and although you did, it was also to hang out with your friends. It was a great meeting place. They don't have that anymore.
And
we played basketball all the time. We had pickup
games
right after school.
Yeah.
We could spend the whole day till time to go to bed. Right. I think that was very important for people my age.
Yeah, but I want to come back very briefly. There are a few places that had television sets.
Yes. Should I mention? Yeah.
So you would go and order a Coke and watch the game or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. And including with my father, whatever. He liked to watch fights. So we'd go and we'd watch, Joe Louis, a later day Joe Louis. Also, Danforth Radio was a store on Bloor, very much near the, what's the one here, where they sell a lot of records, on the north side of Bloor. Just west of Bathurst. It's a record store, big record store. No, but that was a Danforth Radio there, and you'd sit on the floor and they'd let you watch a game. It was also, good advertising.
Maybe
you'd want to buy one eventually. And televisions were very expensive and only had one or two channels. And people were paying a fortune for little black and whites.
So those are
that was a big day when you got your TV. You probably remember that.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Do you remember how old you were when you got on TV?
Well, that's when my mark started going down even more. I think I was 15 at the time.
Me too. I was 15 when we got.
But
it was a big day. Where did you put the television set?
In the living room. You?
That's when my mother's ironing board moved from the kitchen into the living room when the television set got there.
But that was a big thing for our age.
Do you have any thoughts about the effect of the University of Toronto on this neighborhood and then Kensington Market on this neighborhood?
That's okay. I have to, again, think of myself. Kensington Market, of course, isn't the same as it was then. I think Kensington Market, for your neighborhood you're talking about, right, was very important. That was our key, as I mentioned, that was our key shopping area, right, for food. Okay, and especially Jewish holidays. Like, you didn't have to go up to Dater's. Dater's was downtown, as a matter of fact, right? So you could get your whole, we'd get a Passover order from a Kensington Market, right?
Big change.
I still, for Passover, I will go and get certain things at Kensington. There's a nut store in Kensington, do you know? And I will get certain types of nuts that I need to make choroises.
I
still make the choroises, the same store.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's not the same. It's the same idea.
Yeah.
Okay, and I was out, and there was a great cheese store in Kensington that's been there for years, right?
Yeah, there are a couple of them beside each other.
And I think it's Globe, is it? Globe
I don't know
cheese,
the name.
Whatever, So, and I think they're owned by the same people, actually. So it still has that charm for me. And I get it used to be even better when Switzers and Shopsies was
and United.
I still occasionally will go up to Bathurst and Lawrence to go to United for a breakfast. You've done that?
Yeah. I like the pea soup.
And then I'll go to the Barbara Frum Library, which is a wonderful library.
So Kensington Market was central to your lives to do your shopping.
Yeah, very important. And remember, Harvard had the fish market.
Right.
So we didn't get fish at Kensington. And Harvard had the bakery.
So that's been around a long time.
Yeah, so we wouldn't get our bread from Kensington at all, right? I'm trying to think. Well, you asked me something else about the effect of Kensington.
And the University of Toronto.
Oh, okay. University of Toronto was a goal that existed that you didn't really think of growing up. Like, I kind of always wanted to go to university, but seemed headed for accountancy because it was cheaper. You just go and work for an accountant. A lot of Jewish boys of my ilk ended up working for accountants. It was an acceptable profession. You made a certain amount of good living. You got to wear suits. And I did work there for 2 summers, and I went through all that. You look like a mensch as a 17, 18-year-old kid. But it's the most boring job I could ever imagine. I don't know if you've ever thought of it.
But I would. That would be my reaction, for sure.
No, it was horribly boring, but you act like a big shot.
You look like a big shot.
You look like a big shot. Yeah, and the guy that your clients think what a smart young boy you are. Blah blah blah. Okay, so but the university was there as a goal. I never used to wander into the university as in high school or public school. The closest we would get as a young kid, my mother would go to Queen's Park with me and with a stroller or something, right? I'm sure we did that a fair bit.
And I did out for a walk.
But it wasn't nobody in my family thought of going to university, especially. Okay, they were kind of happy when I decided to go, but they supported me in that. And I remember after my first year, waiting for my results, which were in the newspaper, by the way. Did you know that?
No.
Oh, they published all the results.
Oh, my God.
So you'd know what class you had and blah, 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 blah. And if you failed, of course, your name wouldn't appear, so there wasn't any embarrassment that way. If you had a supplementary to write, that would appear. Okay. So, but I remember after my year of university, my first year, I was working for an accountant in the summer, expecting that I would, if I didn't pass, I would go and become an accountant. And I remember thinking, I had a really nice time in university. I learned some things. I had some great lectures, had some wonderful profs. If I fail, fine, I had the experience. So when I passed, I was very happy, and I continued going. I was also happy when I got the marks in grade 13 to go to university, right? Like, it was nice. I then, unfortunately, overstepped. I went into law, and so I had Osgoode Hall for one successful year, and after that I wanted to quit, and do what, right? So I went back foolishly to second year. So there I am in second year Osgoode, and I hated every second of it, really. It was a bad miss. I knew from day one, I remember day one, and I didn't do any work. I didn't have the heart to tell my parents I'm not going to be a lawyer, and I just basically flunked completely.
So that was one way to get out.
It was the easy way, yeah. It was the easy way.
But then you became a teacher.
Yeah, and they used actually my credits from first year law to help me upgrade myself, so nothing lost. Yeah, and I can say, yeah, I went to Osgoode Hall.
Yeah.
And even passed first year, which is a tough year, by the way.
Yeah.
As your son went to Osgoode too?
No, he studied law in Winnipeg.
In Winnipeg. Yeah. Oh, okay.
But like you, he didn't like it.
No,
either.
But he didn't like it after doing it for about 8 years.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah. I'm just going to talk about several very large
sure.
things, and then I think we'll call
am
it
I being too loquacious?
You're wonderful. Okay. Absolutely wonderful. Please. Were you around when the whole issue of the Spadina Expressway was supposed to be coming
through? Oh, yeah.
Did you have any... what do you remember about that?
Oh, well, I remember my friend, who still is my friend, he lives on the Searle. Do you know where Searle is?
No.
Okay. So I know it from a different point of view. They wanted to go through his house and destroy his house for the Spadina Expressway. Yeah. And he got Robert Kaplan, mm-hmm. who was against the expressway. Did you know that at
yeah.
the time?
Yeah, I didn't know that he was against it.
Yeah, and my friend actually became the head of the Citizens Against the Spadina Expressway for that area and used to appear on television talking about it. So I sympathize with him. It didn't affect me because it didn't go... I don't drive a car. And secondly, it wasn't going to go through my house.
But coming through the neighborhood, you didn't think much about it.
Well, I knew that people with more influence than me were trying to stop it. And I trusted... for my friend to put himself out like that, you have to know him. That's really a step.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So he was very upset about it.
Yeah, and he was right, as it turned out. They didn't do it, right?
Yeah. Oh, they stopped it at Eglinton.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that neighborhood, beginning at Eglinton, fought it.
Yeah.
Yeah, very strongly. Yeah.
Okay.
Two others. One is Rochdale and the student activism.
I know a lot about that.
Okay, so what was happening? What was your impression?
Okay, first of all, my contact with Rochdale starts off at something called neighborhood house on Harbert. There was a student house residence of really left-wing people. The university housing led by a guy called Howard Edelman. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know Howard.
And there were three guys that I always connect that were kind of involved. One was Edelman, the other was Matt Cohen, who the park is named after him. He's a writer.
Right.
The late Matt Cohen.
Yeah.
And the other one was an interesting guy who, I'm not going to mention too much, but Art Pape. Art Pape was actually the god of those three guys. Edelman was in charge, but Art Pape was a driving force. Okay, I seen him here at the Y. He doesn't remember me. None of them remember me, as it turns out. But I was like a hanger-on. I was now in my 20s, and there were a couple of girls there that I fancied. And I would hang out in the hope of meeting them closer. And they went at one point, their highlight was they all went to the March on Washington, a whole group of them, when Luther King made the speech, right? And I tried to get there, but I got arrested on the way. Oops, I shouldn't have said that. I was hitchhiking in the New York Thruway, and I was picked up by the police. But a lot of Rossdale seemed to be a connection to that type of student residence. Okay, and Rossdale at the time, I remember as a very left wing. The guy that I always think of with Rossdale is Dennis Lee. He was a poet who yes. wrote Alligator Pie.
Yes, yes.
And he was a resident of Rossdale who romanticized it a bit. And I do remember going, had a friend who lived there, and we went up, and all kinds of people would be smoking dope.
Oh, plenty
it
of that.
It was true.
Oh, yeah.
It was true. And it seemed to be a... But they had guards at the door, security guards, whose job we thought was to alert the people when the cops were coming. They weren't. That seemed to be the general wisdom of the time. And I'm trying to remember his name. He's a prof. He was a lawyer who was for the Chicago 7. He had a ponytail. Famous lawyer. No, it doesn't ring a bell.
It does
all.
Ring a bell. I just can't retrieve the name.
I remember he came to Rossdale once to speak or whatever. And it was strange because it was almost a scary place for me. Like it seemed that if I heard somebody was living at Rossdale, they were doomed to become degenerate. That's how I thought of Rossdale. And it became a David Kroll senior home at some point, which is a sort of irony. And probably some of the people of that era, that's their ambition, to grow old and move to David Kroll and smoke as much dope as they want. I don't even know what goes on in David Kroll.
Well,
talking about changes, by the way, in the neighborhood.
Well, that's a huge change.
But
you remember with a bit of concern about it.
Well, I knew that it was one of the places you have to be careful. There are certain places that you grow up, you only live as if you're a male. And I was single for a long time. You grow up knowing where to go and where not to go and what to look out for. I don't know if women, unless they're very, very independent, have that same way of looking at the world.
Well, I guess...
Because they always have their husband or their boyfriend helping them. You may be in a different kettle of fish.
That's for after the taping, Harvey.
Yeah.
Okay, and the last thing in terms of these big historical events is the end of World War II.
Wow. That's funny. I don't remember it ending. I do remember one headline, and it was, and I remember the back of the Toronto Star that my dad used to bring. Oh, actually, I remember two things. I remember the Toronto Star had the headline on the back, a big picture of FDR dead. And I remember as a kid, I was 6 years old, running out on the street and pretending to be a newsboy, yelling, "Extra, extra, read all about FDR dead." I had no idea how significant that was, but I certainly was aware of Roosevelt and Stalin and all these.
You did that?
Yes, I did that. but almost playing at it, right?
Of course.
The other thing I remember is...
That's a remarkable story.
Well, not to me, but the other one is my father coming upstairs with a really determined look, and he had a Toronto Star, and he threw the star on the table, and it opened up, and the headline was "Hitler is dead," and I remember that as a wonderful day. But the look of my father's face was incredible. He didn't say a word. I don't remember the war ending. I do remember, aftermath, some of our teachers coming home from service. We had never known these teachers, right? But there'd be a Mr. Chick or whatever, and we knew, the word was that he had been in the Army. And I remember in high school, we had cadet inspections. Mm-hmm. Did you have that in your school ever?
I remember there were cadets, but I...
But no, everybody in the school was a cadet. All the boys had to march.
Yeah.
All the way through from grade 9 up to grade 13, as I recall. And you'd be in platoons of your class, of the boys in your class. And some of the teachers would wear their military outfits and medals for that. I have a horrible memory of that because I was in the marching band, and I played the bass drum, and I had to wear a uniform, and I was a terrible bass drummer. So I have a picture of me in my uniform.
But those are colorful memories,
yeah,
especially
but
the
not
teachers.
At the time. How about being bawled out in front of 900 students? And my friend still makes fun of it. He was there. He knew me. And imagine your teacher, music teacher, coming over yelling, "It's Boom Boom Jacobs, Boom Boom." So I became known as Boom Boom Jacobs.
You can laugh at it now.
I can laugh at it now, yes, yeah.
So Harvey, before we say sum up, I'm wondering if there's anything, when you think of the changes that you have lived with, observed, experienced, if there's anything else that you want to talk about that I might not have brought up.
That's a good question also. And I have to think,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah,
intent is
yeah,
the
guy. Yeah.
What am I going to think of? Okay, I think overall that it was more fun being a teenager and easier to be a teenager then than it is now, for all the reasons that I've said. We had places to go without parental supervision or worry. We also seemed to be more responsible about drinking. The fact that I was in a club without adult supervision, right? And we managed to monitor ourselves, I thought it was a wonderful experience. I don't think they could allow that now. Could you allow your kids to have a party in a hotel room when they were 16? Would you let your daughter go there if you had a daughter?
I had only sons.
I know.
No, but I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, and we had places to go every night.
Yeah.
We had, okay, here as a member, I would find it hard to know which time is available for me to go swimming. Which time can I use the gym? It seems to be really restricted because of all the groups and classes money making and all that, right? It was a much simpler time.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's too bad. You think it also would have been easier growing up then than now?
I'm not doing it now, but I agree. I mean, we did play on the street and that kind of thing, and children didn't have play dates the way they do. So there was less monitoring of the children at that time.
Now, in school, we fooled around a lot more, I felt, than in my own experience teaching. I found that I was forever as a student talking to classmates about things not to do at school. We didn't throw paper airplanes. I mean, it wasn't silly, but there was a certain. And Jewish school was a horrible experience. Did you go after public school?
After school at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, that was the worst possible idea. And I don't know. As a girl, it would have been horrible too. But you probably didn't have a bas mitzvah.
Right. No.
So we had this goal. Oh, you've got to study from the time you're 5 years old. Blah 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 blah. And I mentioned that you can turn out two ways. I started Jewish school with a private teacher. We paid very little. There were only two of us in the class. The other guy is Eddie Goldfarb, who became a rabbi. Mm-hmm. You know Eddie? You
don't? No.
No. Okay.
No.
Yeah. I became me. So. Yeah. You know, just how you turn out. But he knew he was going to be a rabbi from the time he was started, I think.
Well, Harvey,
that's it.
This has been... So I just want to say thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That we have a lot of extremely interesting information. And when we finally do something with it, you can be sure I'll let you know
Please.
Where you can read about it.